Thank you. This is the first time I'm getting to present any of my dissertation work, so it's pretty exciting. I should say before I get started, this work is funded by the American Educational Research Association Dissertation Grant. I'll jump right into it. So overall, there's a positive association between neighborhood exposure and educational outcomes. When we look at cross-sectional studies, we see pretty clear trends where children living in or exposed to high SES or advantaged neighborhoods have better outcomes. Kids living in lower SES neighborhoods have worse outcomes. A recent review of longitudinal studies by Sharkey and Faber, they conclude that the most consistent findings from longitudinal neighborhood effect studies is that the effect of neighborhood disadvantage on cognitive and academic outcomes for children and adolescents is more severe if disadvantage is persistent and experienced over generations. Sharkey and Elbert did a paper in 2011 with a very life course paper looking at intergenerational transmission of inequality. And they found that exposure to neighborhoods over consistent, or poverty of neighborhoods over consistent generations led to a reduction in cognitive skills by half a standard deviation. And Wadke did a paper where he looked at if children were consistently exposed to neighborhood poverty over like a 17-year follow-up, the graduation rate for Black youth decreased by 20% and all of the youth by 10%. Experimental and quasi-experimental studies, we see mixed results where the Gatreau study was quasi-experimental and they found that kids who moved from urban poor neighborhoods to suburban neighborhoods were more likely to graduate from high school, attend college. The MTO, the Moving to Opportunity study, which was experimental, found no such effects, but some researchers argue that this is because when kids moved, perhaps they didn't change schools or peer groups, which is really important in this during childhood and adolescence. So I think there's clear evidence that neighborhoods affect child and adolescent educational outcomes, but I think there are some limitations of the literature. One is multiple ecologies. Most research ignores the multiple ecologies that affect youth by only looking at neighborhood home or neighborhood school. And there's some evidence that says whenever you leave out one of the contexts, mainly school, we're overestimating the effects of neighborhood. The second is longitudinal design. This is well established in the neighborhood effects literature. We know that what happens early in childhood has long-term effects into adolescence and adulthood over a number of health and well-being outcomes, and that neighborhood exposure, it takes a while for those factors to translate into health and well-being unless you experience, you know, witness a murder or something really violent, in which case those things usually have immediate impacts on behavior and education. The third is what I call relevant context for children and adolescents. Most people, most researchers use the home census tract as a measure of neighborhood because it's available, it's what we have, where data is limited. But I argue that we need to look at other contexts, especially in this critical period of development, and that maybe perhaps moving towards a school neighborhood and other ways of looking at school neighborhoods is the way to go. And then selection bias, it's I think the biggest problem in neighborhood effects literature, and I will get to that in just a moment, but for this paper, my research addresses all of these limitations in some way. Okay, so my research questions are, net of family and school context, do neighborhoods affect math and reading achievement during childhood and adolescence, and if so, to what degree? Do the effects vary by child, race, ethnicity, or SES? And do the effects vary by neighborhood type? And by neighborhood type, I mean a home neighborhood versus a school neighborhood. And I was really terrified that I was not going to find anything and I was going to write a dissertation on a null finding, which actually wasn't the case. They're just very small effects. Okay, so my data, I'm using the early childhood longitudinal study kindergarten cohort. It is a really, really incredibly rich data set that follows 21,400 kids from kindergarten to baseline. It's nationally representative, it's longitudinal. We have geocodes for every place that they lived and go to school over the time period. It also includes information on children, parents, teachers, home, context, as well as direct and indirect assessments of cognitive, social, and emotional development. They also made efforts to follow children over time because we know mobility is really important in childhood. To create my neighborhood context, I merged the census data and ACS 2005-2009 five-year sample. So the ECLSK was measured in kindergarten, first grade, third grade, fifth grade, and eighth grade. I merged the decennial census with kindergarten, and I merged the ACS data with eighth grade, and then I did a linear interpolation of the years, the waves in between. All right, selection bias, I think anybody who does neighborhood effect studies would say this is the biggest problem in this area. It's the major criticism of observational designs and leads to a potential threat to the validity of existing research. It occurs when the selection mechanism is not independent from the outcome, meaning low SES families are more likely to move into, for instance, a deprived neighborhood than high SES families, and at the same time, children of low SES families are likely to have lower educational achievement than children of high SES families. And so if children are not randomized into neighborhoods, right, because families have agency about where they live, they choose where they live for the most part, how can we tell if educational achievement is due to neighborhood exposure or other factors? I use what I call a time-varying propensity score to control for this, or address this. The time-varying propensity score is a time-varying covariate in my growth models that represent the likelihood of a family living in a type of neighborhood. The propensity score is a probability of exposure to treatment conditional on observed covariates. To get a propensity score, you run a logistic regression where you regress your outcome, which is or your neighborhood type, your treatment, on background characteristics, both time varying and time invariant. And you do this for each neighborhood type, for each wave, and represent it in a time varying covariate your model. But how do you decide which covariate to add in at which time? And we do this by looking at childhood mobility. So this is an example of what the covariate would look like in my data, where I have five waves, and at baseline, the child is assigned the baseline propensity score. At wave two, they didn't move, so they keep the same propensity score. At wave three, they move, so they're now assigned the propensity score for wave three. Wave four, they didn't move, so they keep that propensity score. And wave five, they move, so they're assigned the new propensity score. We've recently published a paper in Social Science and Medicine that shows how this methodology can be used to address selection bias in longitudinal studies in neighborhood effects and self-rated health status if you want to know more about this. Okay, so I'm looking at reading and math scores from kindergarten through eighth grade, and I used IRT scale scores, which were really great because they are able to make direct comparisons from kindergarten all the way through eighth grade to look at change over time. The scales for math go from 0 to 174 and reading to 212. I have 8,600 kids for math and 8,100 kids for reading, and each is measured at 5 time points. For neighborhoods, I use census tracts, even though I said they're a horrible measure. But I did it for home neighborhoods because I want to be able to compare my research to what's been done already. And then I use school census tracts here for the same reason. The other parts of my dissertation I actually use my cool geography skills to create different neighborhoods, which I'll talk about later. And then to characterize my neighborhoods, for the purpose of this presentation, I'm talking about poverty, which I cut up into tertiles, and the reference group is the medium tertile, so that all of my results are comparing low poverty neighborhoods to medium poverty neighborhoods and high poverty to medium poverty neighborhoods. The intra-class correlation coefficient for these outcomes, meaning the proportion of variation explained from the outcome explained by census tracts, are 0.06 and 0.05, which are pretty low. And I should say that across in kindergarten, 32% of kids, their home and their school census tracts are the same, but over time that decreases to 18%, so there's some variation in neighborhood exposure, for sure. I use multi-level growth curve models with random intercepts and random slopes to look at variation in both reading and math over time. So these models say that each child has the same functional form, but their individual slopes and intercepts are allowed to vary over the population averages. For each math and reading, I looked at higher order terms. For math, nothing was significant. It's a linear model. For reading, there was a significant quadratic effect. So the linear slope is significant and positive, and the quadratic slope is significant and negative, meaning that kids are achieving and then eventually level off. And then I'm looking at what I'm going to present today. I've done a lot more than these, but I'm going to present the neighborhood plus child plus family plus school, and then some cross-level interactions between neighborhood and race and ethnicity and neighborhood and SES. I'm not showing the results for family because it's exactly on the individual and family context. It's exactly what you would expect. Being Black, Hispanic, poor leads to lower outcomes. White, Asian, high education, those things lead to higher outcomes. But I thought this was really interesting. This is whenever I just have family and school in the model. These results are consistent across time, and then there's different aspects of the school environment that are affecting these outcomes differentially. So for math achievement, when parents are really active in the school programs, they go to the PTA meetings, they are participating in fundraising, things like that, we see significant positive increases in math achievement. It doesn't matter at all for reading, but the only kind of school characteristic that matters all the way through time is whether kids are in a very high minority school. And when that's the case, we see decreases in reading achievement. This is a plot of the trajectories, the predicted math scores at each grade in low and high poverty neighborhoods for boys in school neighborhoods. I chose boys because boys have higher math scores, girls have higher reading scores in school neighborhoods because it's more novel, although the school in the home neighborhoods produce almost exactly the same results. And the point here is that neighborhoods matter very little. This bottom number represents the points and the percentage difference in achievement in a Black boy living in a low poverty neighborhood and a high poverty neighborhood. And that translates to a 1% difference. I mean, it's very, very small. But if you look at the difference between an Asian boy living in a low poverty neighborhood and a Black boy living in a high poverty neighborhood, that's a 9% difference in outcome. And this is really just driving home the point that it's really about the individual and family characteristics that are driving these differences, not neighborhoods. These are the reading outcomes. It's the exact same thing. This bottom number is the difference between Hispanic girls living in low and high poverty neighborhoods, and that translates into a 2% difference. But the difference between Hispanic girls in a high poverty neighborhood and an Asian girl in a low poverty neighborhood is a 7% difference. Again, driving home that it's really about family. So I wanted to find a way to be able to easily compare these effects across context. These represent the effect sizes across context for eighth grade. And I chose eighth grade because I think as children age, neighborhoods are most likely going to affect them more as they're independently interacting in the neighborhood, you know, not with their family. I have to say these neighborhood models are different than what I presented before. These models do not control for selection, so if it did control for selection, these numbers would probably be much smaller. And these models were centered around eighth grade, not kindergarten, and the outcome is continuous rather than multinomial because these represent a one standard deviation difference or change in the percent poverty or the proportion poverty in a neighborhood. So they're pretty small. It goes from 0.07 to 0.1. But if you compare that with the effect sizes for child, family, and school, you can see that this is really where the differences in educational achievement are coming. I mean, the effect size for SES, family SES, which is a continuous measure created by the ECLSK, ranges from 0.39 to 0.49. I mean, it's really where we're getting our bang for our buck. So I think these demonstrate, one, that neighborhoods do have a significant effect, but they're very substantively very, very small. And if we were going to do an intervention to increase educational achievement, I wouldn't put my money on neighborhoods. So again, wrapping this up, neighborhoods have a small effect on educational achievement, which is consistent with most research, but I think the magnitude of these effects are even smaller because I included the school context. School context variables are more robust in explaining outcomes in neighborhood environments, and there's research that shows, again, that whenever you control for family, home, and school, school neighborhoods are more robust, and then when we don't include the school, we're overestimating our neighborhood effects. And I think school neighborhoods are a relevant context for children and adolescents, and I should say that the school neighborhood itself and the factors within the school are not so highly collinear that I'm conflating the two. I think these are two separate effects, and I'm going to explore this later in my dissertation. Limitations and future steps, I'm combining these because I'm hoping to address these in my dissertation. I didn't talk about theory really at all, and I didn't talk about mechanisms, like how neighborhoods work to impact educational achievement. It's one of the things I want to get to. I also use a census tract as a neighborhood, which I think is a poor proxy for neighborhood. But I'm looking at school catchment areas, buffers, and clusters. And I think school catchment areas, especially for this age range, is really where it's going to be the best measure for neighborhood. I'm also going to look at whether and to what degree family and school mediate the relationship between neighborhood and education, because I think that's really important to look at. And finally, I'm going to look at inverse probability of treatment weights as a way to control for selection versus time-varying propensity scores. So, thank you. Any questions? So no, I'm gonna take all of the kids that were sampled from each school. I'm gonna bring in their census tracts, and I'm gonna create a contiguous area out of that, and I'm gonna call that the school catchment area. Okay, thank you.